is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Matthew Radbard, author of Lead Like a Pro, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are recording actually today on a rare Wednesday because yesterday we were a day late and a dollar short on our normal NBA pod.
It wasn't happening, Mike.
It was not happening.
We'll just leave it at that. And we're going to dive right in because we have a lot to talk about, Mike. And I hope you're prepared for the new segment. Are you prepared for the new segment?
I'm prepared. I'm ready.
There are clowns everywhere.
There's clowns everywhere.
Look forward to that about halfway through the episode.
I might have my first candidate. Are we going to jump into it right now or are we waiting?
Let's wait a minute.
I got a good candidate right off the top of my head.
Oh, let's just do it. Forget it. Let's just start with it, right? Let's go with it.
The Orlando Magic.
Oh. Explain.
The Orlando Magic.
Explain.
Chet!
I know, right?
23 and what, five blocks,
no,
seven
blocks.
Rebounds,
six
forces,
blocks.
Six blocks, intimidating everybody.
And my favorite moment was in the post-game interview when he said, well, that's the record now. It's going to get broken tomorrow. Now, I don't know what he's doing tonight.
I haven't seen a box score tonight, but man.
Well, they beat the Jazz 98-77. Chet Holmgren. Wait, is this today? Oh, no, that's yesterday. They won 87-71. Chet today was 11-12-3 with two blocks. He was 3 of 11 from the field, so not necessarily the best performance today. They won, but...
I think he's going to be good. Giddy's good, man. Oklahoma City's going to be
Poku,
good.
5-8-2.
Okay, let's calm down there. But I think Chet, you look at the pictures of him in his NBA uniform, and I mean it looks ridiculous how skinny the guy is. But just watching the highlights of that game yesterday, and some of the things that he was able to do, were pretty impressive. And again, don't overreact to summer league, but it's clear that the guy's going to find his way and be a good player and maybe better than what I thought it's hard to react over one game, but man, what he did defensively, some of those highlights and the blocks and just what you saw him doing on the defensive end of the floor, combined with his ability to shoot at his size, Orlando may end up regretting what they did. But we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see. Early, early.
It's early to tell. Okay, here's my clowns everywhere, Mike.
Okay,
Kevin Durant. Here's why he's a clown.
Okay, tell
me. He waits until Kyrie opts into the contract to ask for a trade. And now, reportedly, I don't know if you saw the reports today, he's been off the grid and no one can find him or talk to him for the last 48 hours. What? Like, seriously? Like, and when I say nobody, like, no league sources, supposedly some players that are close to him haven't been able to find him.
He texted after Chet's game.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Well, I read the report today.
Said, I see you, number seven. Do your thing, something to that effect.
I guess when I say he's off the grid, like, he's not responding to people. I mean, let me see if I can find it. I saw this today. Kevin Durant. Off the grid. Oh, wait, hold on. I saw this. I was reading this article. Well, maybe we'll talk about it when we get... I'll see if I can find it. I don't want to, like slow the podcast down here, but I'll see if I can find it, and we'll come back to this.
Okay. All right.
So, but anyways... I just think Kevin Durant's a clown. He's a clown at this point. And like, there's reports that he said talks about going back to Golden State. Come on now. Give me a break. I mean, Golden State's not going to say no to that, but
why wouldn't he just go back to Brooklyn?
I don't know.
So they just signed, right? They signed TJ Warren. They lost Bruce Brown. They lost Dragic. They lost Drummond. But you're bringing back, if Kyrie's your buddy and the vaccine fiasco is in our rearview mirror, you have Joe Harris coming back from injury. You re-signed Patty Mills. You've got Seth Curry. You re-signed Nick Claxton. You traded for Royce O'Neal. You have Ben Simmons. Like, isn't the best version of that team... And again, I'm not saying that that team is going to be the best version of that team, but the best version of the Brooklyn Nets is a championship contending team. That roster, those guys that I just named off for you, that doesn't include Cam Thomas, Kessler Edwards, some of the guys they were developing. You still have, I don't know if Aldridge has one more year, if he's done, but regardless, the guys that I just named, that to me is still a team that can compete for a top four seed in the East. And if Kyrie and Durant are at their best, that's a team that could still theoretically win a title, right?
Here you go, Mike. Crispy Haynes reported, numerous stars in the league have tried to get in touch with KD over the last 48 hours, but he has gone dark and won't respond to anyone.
He's a weird dude.
Him and Kyrie, and there you go.
I go back to my initial thought on the Brooklyn Nets, and I don't know if my feelings were quite as strong when it was just Durant and Kyrie initially, but I know from the moment that they made that Harden trade that I kept telling you and kept saying here on the pod, I just don't think that those three personalities, they're all three weird, odd, different kinds of guys, that to get those three guys to all buy in and be on the same page and work to move the Nets in the right direction, I just didn't see it happening, and clearly it didn't happen. But if you look at it now, if Durant and Kyrie really are friends, why wouldn't he go back to Brooklyn? And if you're Brooklyn, what package out there really excites you that you have coming back? Do you really want Ayton and Bridges and whatever draft capital Phoenix has got, and then you got to pay Ayton whatever X amount of dollars? To me... And I know, look, he already demanded a trade, so this is probably a moot point, and he wants out for whatever reason he wants out. But to me, I really think the best chance that he'd have to compete and win a championship based on what the available trades are for the teams that actually could realistically trade for him, I'm not so sure he's not better off staying in Brooklyn. And Brooklyn's probably better off not dealing him, because I don't know what they're going to get back and what they want. Do they want to continue to, if you have Kyrie, are you keeping him and trying to remain competitive? Are you selling off Kyrie too? And what's that trade look like? What's the market for Kyrie? Who wants him? The Lakers, maybe. And that's it. I mean, nobody else is really out there that's going to be beating down the door for Kyrie. So I don't know what the Nets do here. And yeah, I think you're 100% spot on that Durant, with, first of all, going to Golden State, then leaving Golden State, going to Brooklyn, bringing in and hitching his wagon to Kyrie, and then James Harden, and now wanting to get out of Brooklyn with 4 years left on his contract. There are definitely clowns in Brooklyn.
Clowns. All clowns all around. All right, so the way we're going to structure this episode, guy, everyone listening, is we're going to kind of go through all the moves that have happened since the last time we recorded. And a lot of them have been free agents. We're not going to hit all of them, because some of them don't matter. No offense to anyone, but we're going to hit the big ones. Because if we talked about every single move that's happened over the last week, 8 days, we might be here till 11:30, and we're not going to do that. Right, Mike? We're not going to do that.
No, we are not going to be here till 11:30. There's no way.
We're on a limit here. So, we're going to start the big one that happened before free agency started. The Atlanta Hawks traded for DeJounte Murray. They gave up Danilo Gallinari, who then got waived by the Spurs. And he signed with Boston.
Signed with Boston, which good move for Boston. Yeah. A pretty low risk move for Boston. I think he's a guy that there's minutes for him occasionally here and there. I think he'll be a good help in the regular season. I'm not sure
his playoff
wise. Yeah. I'm not sure defensively what he has left, but he's a guy that certainly can provide depth to Boston over the course of the regular season. So it's a good pickup for the Celtics.
Yep. And then the Spurs also got multiple first round picks. Obviously, the Hawks wanted a pair, and there have been rumors that Murray and Young were going to get paired together. So now Murray and Young are paired together. And Atlanta Hawks look like a legitimate team in the East. Am I ready to say that they're a contender in the East? No, I am not. Because as good as Trey was last year in the playoffs, as good as he was in the playing game against us, he then didn't play very well in the next game, set of games. And on top of that is we've never really seen Murray in the playoffs. He played in a play-in game last year. Has he played in anything else other than that, Mike? Really?
Maybe early on in his career.
He wasn't playing a lot of minutes then.
No, absolutely not.
So I'm not ready to say they're a contender, but they are a whole heck of a lot better, because Murray is a way better player, in my opinion, than Gallinari. So I think this is interesting. I'm not necessarily thrilled about it, because once again, this just makes another East team better. Another team for the Cavs to have to compete with as the Cavs continue their upward trajectory. But I can see why the Hawks would do this to improve their chances, and I do think they're better.
Murray makes the Hawks better, and I do think he's a pretty good fit next to Trae Young in that he's a guy that is a long, active defender, all defensive team type player. He's a guy who rebounds the ball from the guard position. Basically, he fills in and does all the things that Trae Young doesn't do very much of. And of course, the one thing that you would want from Murray is that he'd be a better spot-up shooter around Trae. But hopefully, he's going to continue to develop as a 25-year-old guy. So it seems strange. This trade, it's somewhat odd from San Antonio's standpoint in that if you're trying to go young and rebuild, Murray's only 25. He's got 2 years left on his contract, and it's not an outrageous contract. And so you can understand why Atlanta wanted him. But yet, Atlanta gives up 3 first-round picks plus a pick swap in order to bring in Murray. And does this make Atlanta a favorite in the East? I mean, you said it, right? Probably not. Are they better than Boston? Are they better than Milwaukee? Are they better than Philadelphia? Are they better than the Bulls? Are they better than Cavs? Are they better than... I just don't know. I don't know where you now slot the Hawks in the East. I'm certainly not ready to crown the Hawks as a favorite. So I don't know, giving up that much draft equity to give up three first round picks for a guy who's a really good player, who's probably a borderline all-star player year in and year out for the next 5 years. But does he push you over the top and make you a championship contending team? I'm not sure that's the case. And I'm not sure I would have wanted to give up three first round picks for him. On the other hand, if I'm San Antonio, he seems like a guy that I'd want to build around. And I'd want my other young guys. He's a guy I'd want in the fold if I was trying to build my team and trying to build a young team. And conversely, if you think, I mean, I guess San Antonio's betting against how good Atlanta's going to be, but chances are Atlanta's going to be, at worst, I would say middle of the pack. And if you're talking about middle of the pack, then you're talking about a 15, 16, 17 pick in the draft with these number one picks. And are they ever going to be able to find anybody then better than DeJounte Murray with one of those picks? I'm not sure. Could they? Sure. But I don't know that they're going to. So it seems like kind of a little bit of an odd trade for each team. And then clearly when you get to the end of these 2 years on Murray's contract, Atlanta's going to want to re-sign him. And if he's successful and plays well over the next 2 years, he's going to probably be a guy that's going to want a max or a near max contract. And is DeJounte Murray, that he seems like he's one of those guys that kind of gets you in trouble if you end up signing him to a max contract, because he's probably never going to be the best guy on your team. And clearly with Trey there, that's going to be the case in Atlanta. So I'm not sure I'm not sure I love this trade for either team. I like DeJounte Murray. I like what he does for the Hawks. I'm just not sure that what they had to give up warrants what they got back.
Yep. All right. Penny Mills declined his player option but ended up signing a 2-year deal. Good move for Penny Mills. That's all I'm going to say on that one. You have anything to add to that? No, right?
No, I mean, other than the fact that, again, I think by re-signing Patty Mills and some of the other moves that the Nets have made, if you take away KD's trade demand, it just seems like the best place for him to be might be Brooklyn. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Kemba Walker got bought out by the Detroit Pistons. Or they're working on finalizing a contract buyout. That hasn't happened yet, right? Or has it happened?
I believe they did buy. I believe Kemba's been bought out.
But he hasn't signed anywhere yet.
He has not signed anywhere yet. No, I don't think he's signed anywhere.
No. Okay. So there's that. Miles Bridges. That's a whole. I don't know how much you want to get into this, but Miles Bridges, on the eve of free agency, got arrested for a supposed domestic violence charge. There's been no movement on his contract situation. No one signed him. I think they're probably waiting for the legal part to play out before they do anything. But
He's not getting any money. I mean, he's looking at he's going to be lucky if he's back in the league at this point.
Yeah.
I really think that I could see a situation where he doesn't play this season, and whatever his legal situation is ends up playing itself out. And then as the story fades into the background, or as more of the facts come out that either, man, he could be done, or maybe things turn and go in a different direction. But first of all, obviously, what he did, if he did what was alleged and what it looked like in the photos that his wife shared, then he probably should never play in the league again. And clearly from his standpoint, I mean, just terrible timing on his part. And obviously there's no good timing.
Yeah.
There's no good timing for what he did. So I just don't know where, I don't know where you go with this. If you're Charlotte, I don't know how you resign him. And certainly nobody's going to be beating down his door to be able to sign Miles Bridges. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does not suit up for any team in this upcoming season. That would not surprise me at all. And deservedly so.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So the next big story was the Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving nonsense, which we've kind of already talked about. So we can move on from that, right, Mike?
Well, we don't need to talk anymore about that. All right. The next thing, Jalen Brunson was supposed to meet with the Mavericks, but they canceled on him, and he ended up signing a huge deal with the Knicks. It sounds like the Knicks are going to be charged with some kind of tampering violation here, which sounds about right, primarily because the news came out like 2 days before it was even free agency. And then magically, once free agency started, he automatically had a contract. He got...
Well, you know the whole thing that, right, his dad was hired onto the staff, and Leon Rose's son is Jalen Brunson's first client as an agent, and Rick Brunson, Jalen Brunson's dad, who's on the Knicks staff now, was Leon Rose's first client as an agent, and Rick Brunson was introduced to Leon Rose through World Wide West. So there's just this whole thing where it was clear that this was what was going to happen, and whether it was tampering, where these guys were all sitting around having a meal together as buddies, or how it came down, certainly everybody kind of knew. The rumors were out there long before free agency opened on July 1 that was where Brunson was going to go.
Yeah.
So not surprising. I mean, I think I like Brunson as a player. I think that if you're New York, they haven't really had a good point guard in a long, long time. So to bring in Brunson, who's clearly a quality guy, at the price, they probably overpaid for him a little bit, but I'm okay with it. I don't think it's a terrible contract.
He was given the same money the Mavericks were going to give him, but they were given in one less year, right? The Mavs were going to do a 5-year deal.
Yeah,
but
it hurts Dallas. Right, I mean, it hurts Dallas to lose a guy because of the way that it works against the cap. They can't really. It's not like they can lose Brunson and then replace him with another $100 million player.
Yeah,
they just basically lose that spot. So I don't know what Dallas is going to do. They're kind of in a tough spot because clearly Brunson was their second best player this year, and so now you don't have that guy in place. I know they're getting Tim Hardaway Jr. back off of injury next year, which helps. But Dallas is in a situation where it's a little reminiscent of the Cavs and LeBron in the first iteration, where they keep trying to figure out, well, what can we put around Luka to get him over the top? And to this point, they really haven't been able to figure out the perfect formula. And who knows if they will or they won't. But losing Brunson certainly hurts them.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I think
they did get JaVale, though. They did get JaVale.
Yeah. That's a big move. It's a big move, JaVale McGee. 14-year vet. There you go. The next thing that happened that was on this was Jaren Jackson Jr. underwent surgery. And he's out 4 to 6 months. Not good for Memphis. Not good. I mean, the good news is that it's now, when he's out 4 to 6 months, I would bet he doesn't play the rest of 2022, and we might see him after the All-Star break. That's going to be my prediction.
Makes sense. I mean, that's a 22-year-old guy, 7-footer with foot problems. You don't really want to mess with that. So they're going to make sure that you give him every opportunity to be able to fully recover. He's too important to their future. When you look at that team, his development into an all-star caliber player is critical to their long-term success and whether or not they can put the right kind of guys around Ja. Clearly the best version of Jaren Jackson is exactly what you want in this league. He hasn't quite gotten to that perfect version, but he's certainly a guy that at 22 years old, you don't want to be messing around with a foot injury. So they're going to give him every opportunity to heal and see what happens from there.
Yep. All right. Next, Bradley Beal, 5-year, $250 million maximum contract extension to stay with the Wizards. I have no words. How long until he tries to get out of Washington? How long?
I don't think it'll be long, and I think it's going to be really hard to get him out of Washington
with his contract
price. This is a case, right, where you look at it, and any other team, all the other 29 teams are looking at it going, God, there is no possible way that I would sign Bradley Beal to that contract. It just doesn't make any sense. And yet, if it's somebody in your own organization who he's their best player, Yeah, you could try to work a sign and trade, maybe get some pieces back for him. Yeah, you could just, they could have just let him walk as an unrestricted free agent. But again, what are you replacing him with if you're Washington? But the problem is when you sign a guy who's not really one of the top 5 to 10 players in the league to a max contract, you're locking yourself in to mediocrity, especially that second contract. Like when you look at these rookie extensions that Zion and Darius Garland and Ja signed, those are huge, huge contracts, but you still have those guys. They're not fully formed. You don't know for sure what any of them are going to become. And because they're whatever Garland's deal potentially, right? It's $193 million over 5 years. So you're still talking like it's almost $60 million less than what Beal is signed for. To me, this Beal contract doesn't make sense, but yet at the same time, you understand, because who's Washington going to get to come in and play for the Wizards? Which is just weird, because when you think about it, as a young NBA player, you would think Washington would be a pretty desirable place to play, in theory, when you think about the city and just all that goes around there. But it's just been such a basketball wasteland for so long. And this Beal contract is either he's going to demand to get out of it after a year or two because Washington still stinks, or the contract's going to become just like John Wall's contract, and it's going to become some kind of terrible albatross that just hangs around their neck. So in a way, you can make the argument they had to do it, but on the other hand, you're just sentencing yourself to mediocrity with this contract.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the Bradley Beal experience. All right. Anthony Simons stayed with Portland 4 years, $100 million. Once again, I think Portland kind of had to do this, right? I mean,
had a great end of the year.
Yeah.
Finished the year super strong.
With everyone out trading CJ. He picked up the pack, picked up the slack. You know, they won too much because of him, I guess. I don't know. I mean, they won games that they didn't deserve to win because the talent wasn't there, and he was a big reason for it.
But here's the thing. I think if we look at the totality of what Portland's doing, right, they bring in Jeremy Grant, you re-sign Simons, you re-sign Nurkic. It feels like they're trying to still continue to win and compete around Dame, which makes sense. If you're going to keep Damian Lillard, then you have to – it doesn't make any sense to try to tank and have Lillard on your team. Then you'd basically be saying, hey, we're going to go ahead and we're going to sell off Damian Lillard to the highest bidder and figure out what we can or can't get and then go from there. But if you're not going to blow it up and get rid of Dame, then you might as well try to build on what you already have and see if you can compete. And what they've done, I think they're probably better. But again, are you kind of sentencing yourself to mediocrity? I mean, I could probably name 6 or 7 teams right off the top of my head that are going to be better than what Portland's going to be able to throw out there next year, no matter how good Dame is. So I get it. I think Simons is a guy that you wanted to bring back regardless, just because he's so young. And even if you're moving on from Dame, I think Simons is a guy you want on your team. But it's a big price tag. We'll see if it works out.
Two players staying with their current teams. Portis signed a 4-year, $49 million contract. Tyus Jones signed a 2-year, $30 million contract to stay with Memphis. Both those moves, I think, were expected. Both those guys are clearly role players on their teams, but they're good role players. So good moves for them. Portis got a little more money than I would have expected. Maybe got a, you know.
He's been an important part of their team, though. I mean, he really has been an important part, especially this past year when Lopez was out. He became their small ball five, and he really played an important role in what Milwaukee was trying to do and played well in that role. And Tyus Jones was probably the best backup point guard in the league. So he's making $15 million a year, which is probably a pretty good price for what he is, a backup point guard. And I think he probably could have started for some teams, but Memphis trying to keep their core together and build on what they were able to do this year as a 2 seed and then taking Golden State to 6 games in the Western semis. So good move for Memphis. I think probably a good move for Tyus Jones, and then continues to play well. And then who knows, maybe after that 2-year contract, maybe he goes out and starts looking for a team that he could call his own, maybe get a bigger contract. So good move for both sides, I think, on that one and on the Portis deal.
Yep. All right. And this one right here is a smaller one, but I just want to say it because this guy just couldn't get enough. Couldn't get enough. Daniel House decided that he was going to go play for the Philadelphia 76ers because he wanted to be back up with James Harden. He had so much fun back in Houston. He's like, love watching him play basketball.
Who would not jump at that opportunity? Who would not jump at that opportunity? That's all. Anybody. People are lining up to play with Harden.
Okay. Joe Ingles is going to Milwaukee as well. Obviously, his status is up in the air with an ACL tear. He'll be out pretty much until the new year. At the earliest, he's coming back. He's a little longer in the tooth, so
The best version of Joe Ingles would be great for Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Whether or not that guy still exists post injury, I don't know. But the best version of Ingles, with his playmaking and 3-point shooting, and ability to get in the passing lanes, and his size, fits perfectly with what Milwaukee wants to do. And if you get the best version of Joe Ingles coming off the injury, that's a really, really good pickup. Now, I think they paid him $6.5 million, which was maybe a little bit more than I think a lot of people thought he would get, but maybe it's an overpaid just that you have to do to get a guy to Milwaukee. So I like the move for the Bucks. Hopefully he gets back at some point in the second half of the season and gets healthy and is able to contribute a little bit, because I think in the playoffs he could be a valuable piece for them for sure.
All right. The next big one, Dort signed a 5-year, $87.5 million to stay with Oklahoma City. That's a huge contract for Dort. I like Dort. He's fun to watch play, but they, you know what?
I think what you're betting on with this contract
is that the rest of your team is growing, right? I mean, that's
and the fact that he's 23 years old, so he has an elite skill as a defender. He's probably, as an on-ball defender, he's probably one of the top 5 on-ball perimeter defenders in the league. And at 23, you got to figure that his prime is still ahead of him. He's been developing as a 3-point shooter. I don't think he's really quite there where you'd want him to be. But if you look at what Oklahoma City is trying to build, and you look at his age, you look at how he fits with the guys that they have, it's a big, big number. I'm not sure if Dort went out on the free agent market that anybody else was going to give him that kind of money. But I can understand why Oklahoma City did, especially in light of the fact that he's 23 years old and that his trajectory is going to continue to go up, and he's still a couple of years away from his prime. So maybe he develops a little bit more as an offensive player, and you combine that with his already all-league defensive ability, and he's a guy I can understand why Oklahoma City wanted to wrap him up. It's just I'm not sure that it was going to take $87.5 million in order to do it.
Yeah. Malik Monk, that's not really a big one. We already talked Jalen. The Lakers' big moves. Lonnie Walker got a 1-year, $6.5 million contract.
That's a good deal, man.
31% from behind the arc, man, last year. And he said, you see what he said today or yesterday? He said,
what Lonnie Walker said?
Lonnie Walker said, I know I didn't play good last year, but just give me the ball from behind the arc and I'm going to knock him down when I'm open.
All right. Well, hey, you got to have confidence.
There you go.
At least I will say, I think the one thing they have to say with the Lakers is that if you look at the guys they signed to this point in free agency, that they're signing a lot of these minimum guys that aren't making very much money, but at least they signed young guys and they weren't going for the Trevor Ariza's.
Carmelo Anthony.
And Kent Bazemore. They're not going for these guys that are over the hill. At least you're trying to bring in some young legs. So to me, if you're going to take a flyer on a guy, and you're going to bring guys into your roster, at least bring in young guys who have some energy and have some potential upside.
And they got
upside.
Juan Toscano-Anderson. I missed that one.
Right, which is a good pickup. I mean, he had a stretch there. I mean, again, it was during the season when Steph was out and they won 15 games, but he was on the floor and playing and doing good things. People were saying good things about him. And so those are the kind of guys, if you're the Lakers, that to me makes a lot more sense than bringing in these retreads that are 36, 37, 38 years old that don't have anything left in the tank. I think I'm not sure that any of this really is going to make a difference in the Lakers' success, but I think if you're going to go a route, I think going the younger route is a lot smarter move by Palinka and the Lakers as opposed to going old.
Yep.
PJ Tucker signed with the 76ers. Mike, he put a nice Instagram post out today thanking the city of Miami for the year that he had with them. And Jimmy Butler commented on it. And I'm going to clean it up a little bit.
Okay.
F you and Joel Embiid. Yeah, I brought him into this.
Nice. Well, Jimmy's not known to mince words.
Well, he put it with like a crying emoji. So he's being funny. But I thought that was a good one. I thought that was good. So I mean,
I'll say this: the best version of PJ Tucker helps Philadelphia, but I think PJ Tucker is what 37 or 38 years old, and the style of play that he has,
stand in the corner, and just the way he throws his body.
Right, on offense, but defensively, throwing his body around the way he does and battling with bigger guys, you wonder, at 3 years, $33 million, what is the second and third year of that contract going to look like? Can he continue to be as effective as he's been? It looked like for a while there in Milwaukee that he was pretty much washed up. I mean, you think about that finals run, and he averaged like whatever. He was playing 30 minutes a game and scoring like 1.7 points per game. So – who knows? Maybe Philadelphia continues to be able to unlock him a little bit the way that Miami did, or maybe age catches up to him and that contract becomes one that Philly really regrets. I'm not sure. The best version of PJ Tucker helps Philadelphia. Whether or not they get that guy, who knows?
Yep. All right. So then we don't need to talk about Drummond going to the Bulls, right? No, we don't need to talk about that.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, then the big things happened at midnight on July 1. Karl Anthony Towns, Nikola Jokic, Ja Morant, Devin Booker all got the Supermax extensions. Oh, well, okay. So the three of them got Supermax extensions, and Ja got the rookie extension. And there's escalators, and they, you know, whatever, you know, they're worth lots of money. So Karl Anthony Towns, Jokic, Booker, and Morant all got extensions. I don't think we're not surprised by any of these moves. Mike, we're not surprised.
All those had to be done. Yeah. I mean, clearly,
yep.
All those contracts, all three of those guys should live up to those contracts. They should be valuable players throughout the entire time that they're on those contracts. They should still be at or near their peak during all the years of those contracts. So yeah, those are all no brainers.
All right. Gary Payton going to the Portland Trailblazers.
So that goes back to what I talked about a second ago. Like, Gary Payton is a guy that you bring in, not because you're trying to tank. He's a guy you bring in because you're trying to win.
Yep.
So I think Portland is probably aiming for,
playing.
They're probably aiming higher, but I think the reality is they're probably their best case scenario is
7-8,
a 5 or 6 seed in the West. I think their absolute best case scenario. Everything goes perfectly. Maybe some other teams catch some injuries. Maybe they can creep into that 5 or 6 spot of Dame's back to his first team All NBA level. But more realistically, yeah, I think they're down probably battling for the play-in. Which, look, if you have Damian Lillard, like I said earlier, you got to try to compete, but I'm not sure that's the right move long-term for the franchise. Yep.
All right, the next move. The savior is back. Ricky Rubio, 3-year contract for $18 million. This is really a 2.5-year deal because he's not going to play until January probably. At best case scenario, new year, January. But this is good for the Cavs. And I'm excited to have Rubio back. I'm excited that it was a 3-year deal. I'm guessing they did that to make the money work and to guarantee that he would come here. I think he'll be good for the team. You clearly saw he was bought into the team.
the whole aspect, and I'm glad that they probably had a wink wink, right, when they traded him. They talked to him and was like, we want you back next year. I mean, I don't know if you can even do that, but, you know, a little wink wink, nudge nudge, right, Mike?
Well, I think you have to look at it and say maybe that's the case, but I think even more so, even more significantly to me, is the fact that the guy was here, was having success, was clearly bought in, and he liked being here, and the team liked having him here. And when they traded him away, at the first opportunity he had to come back, the fact that he wanted to come back and that the team wanted him back speaks well of what that relationship was like. So I think you have to look at that as a positive all the way around. You got to look at it for a positive from Rubio's standpoint, because obviously he wanted to be back here. And then clearly the Cavs felt like what he was contributing and what he brought to the table was valuable. So once he gets back and recovers from that ACL tear, hopefully he's going to be able to step back in and continue to do the things that he was doing to help the Cavs during their success that they had at the beginning of last season prior to that injury. So I think from the Cavs standpoint, 3 years, $18 million, it's a pretty good deal to be able to get a guy that, in all honesty, was his importance to the team during the time when they were winning was probably, I would probably value that much higher than $6 million a year. Let's put it that way.
All right. Zach LaVine, Supermax contract, or $215 million contract, 5 years to return with the Bulls. Nurkic got a 4-year, $70 million deal to stay with Portland. John Wall signing with the Clippers for a 1-year deal. I don't know if there's anything you want to say on those. I think those all are the first two specifically are no-brainers for those team. I think they're kind of stuck. I think in more of Chicago's void, they kind of were stuck, because I feel like if they didn't sign LaVine to a contract to return, that team's not going to be as good.
Similar to Bradley Beal, in a sense, that I think LaVine is a guy that, look, he's a good player. He's a player that a lot of teams would want to have on their team, but I'm not sure that you want him to be your best player. If he's your best player, if he's your highest paid player, I'm not sure exactly what your ceiling is. I know it's not NBA championship, but again, Chicago's putting a competitive product out there, which they haven't been able to do for a number of years prior to the last one or two. So I think LaVine, with what he can do when healthy, I think he's a good player. I think he's a guy that, yeah, it makes sense for Chicago to re-sign him. The John Wall thing, what does Steve Ballmer care? Throw $13.5 million over at Wall over 2 years, and you see if it works, great. If it doesn't work, you just cut him loose, and what's the difference? I mean, the best version, again, just like we've said, the best version of John Wall, a guy who's healthy and bought in, can he help the Clippers? Can he play minutes? Sure. Whether or not that guy still exists, I'm not sure. But if it doesn't, I don't think the Clippers really, it doesn't matter. You just walk away. The Clippers have so many guys in that roster that if Wall isn't what you expected, it's not going to hurt you.
Yep. All right. The Cleveland Cavaliers signed Robin Lopez to a 1-year deal. You know who Sideshow Bob is, right, Mike?
I do. That's The Simpsons.
Yeah, oh, look at you. I mean, that's a pop culture reference from the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, see, that's right. That's why I know it.
Yep.
That's why I know it, baby.
Good move for the Cavs, I think. I mean, it fortifies it. So,
sure.
We don't need to talk about that longer than that. Herder got traded to the Sacramento Kings from Atlanta for Justin Holiday and Maurice Harkless. I think the Kings are also sending a 2024 lottery protected first round pick to the Hawks for Herder. Apparently, Mike Brown saw a lot of good things out of Kevin Herder and wanted him on this team.
I like Herder.
Yeah.
Yes, no?
I mean, I guess Justin Holiday and Maurice Harkless aren't really going to be doing lots of.
It comes down to that pick, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's lottery protected. So the question is, are you going to get a better player than Kevin Herter in spots 14 through 30? I would say your odds are probably low that you're going to get a better player than what Herter is. Herter seems like a team guy, clearly a guy who can shoot it. He's a guy who's played well in the playoffs. I guess what you're doing if you're Atlanta is you're, again, clearing out space to make sure that DeAndre Hunter can play 35 minutes a game. And you're also clearing that space for DeJounte Murray. But I like the pickup. I like the pickup for Sacramento. I think it's, to me, I'd rather have the Sacramento side of this trade than the Atlanta side of this trade, personally. But
all right, then Malcolm Brogdon got traded to the Celtics. Well, it hasn't officially happened yet because it can't happen yet. But Brogdon to the Celtics for Tyce Naismith, a 2023 first round pick, Nick Stauskas.
Sauce Castillo. Sauce Castillo,
Malik Fitz, and Juwan Morgan.
Brogdon, I think, clearly, if Brogdon's healthy, he helps Boston immensely.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. They need some spacing. All right.
I think Brogdon would be a guy that just about any contending team would love to have on their roster, whether the guy's a starter or he's a guy off the bench. He's big. He makes free throws. He can shoot from the outside. He's a good defender. He's long. The question with him has always been his injury history, and who knows if he's going to be available for 82 games or if he's going to be available in the playoffs. But if you get a healthy Malcolm Brogdon, it certainly makes Boston better. No question about that.
All right. Then the big trade, Mike, happened in the middle of the Head Start basketball camp last week. Rudy Gobert to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Walker Kessler, Jared Vanderbilt, Leandro Balmaro. Utah will also get unprotected first-round picks from the Wolves in 2023, 25, 27, and a top-five protected pick in 2029. Whoa, baby. The Utah Jazz are...
First of all, it seems insane, right?
I mean...
When you just read all that stuff off, it just... There's no way...
This is like a Presti move.
A team traded that... Yeah, there's no way that a team traded that for Rudy Gobert. There just is no way.
Well, it happened.
It just makes... I know it happened, and, but it just makes...
You know what the greatest
thing
that come out of the trade is? All the Brian Windhorst memes. That is...
Yeah, the Windhorst memes are very good. They're very good. And him doing his little finger points and all that stuff were very fun. But I think... So, you have to look at this trade. I mean, I know you can't do this, but if you look at each piece separately... I think there's only one piece that doesn't make sense. So here's what I mean. I'm going to look at it in three pieces. So if you look at it from Utah's standpoint, the team that they've rolled out the last 5 years since they drafted Donovan Mitchell clearly has underachieved in the playoffs and hasn't done nearly what they thought it would do. And whether you want to fault Gobert, whether you want to fault Mitchell, whether you want to fault Quinn Snyder, whatever it is that you attribute their lack of success in the playoffs too, the fact remains that they didn't win in the playoffs when people thought that they should. So from Utah's standpoint, you knew they were going to get rid of one or both of Gobert and Mitchell. So trading Gobert, you knew it was coming. And then to be able to get what they got from, forget about the players. I think there's a couple guys in there that can help you in the short term. Walker Kessler is a guy who was drafted in the first round this year, who's a great shot blocker and potentially can maybe replace some of the things that Gobert was able to do. Obviously, he's not going to be on the same level, but does similar things. We all know what Patrick Beverley brings to the team. Malik Beasley's been a proven guy who can bring in off the bench that can score and do some things for your team. So as far as the players that they got, great. But then you look at that haul of number one draft picks and the fact that they're unprotected the first three. And then the 2029 one is protected top five. If you're Utah, you're saying, man, based on the history of the Timberwolves franchise, we're sitting pretty good. So I think from Utah's standpoint, you couldn't have asked. I mean, if you just told them 6 months ago, hey, here's what you're going to get for Rudy Gobert, I think they would have went skipping out the door and just tried to keep it a secret that, oh my God, I can't believe we're going to get all this. So to me, it's a clear win from Utah's standpoint. Then if you look at it from Minnesota's standpoint, I think if you just, and now this isn't going to make sense, but if you take out the fact of what they gave up, which I know you can't, but if you take out what they gave up and you just look at Rudy Gobert adding him to their team, I think it honestly makes a lot of sense because Towns, clearly his deficiency as an NBA player has been on the defensive end of the floor. So now you bring in Gobert, who's been a three-time defensive player of the year. We know what he can do on that end of the court. And so you put him next to Towns. Now you put Towns out playing on the perimeter. with the ability also to post up. Teams are going to have to guard him. They got to, now you got the two bigs, so you're going with sort of the Cleveland theory, the Jared Allen Mobley pairing. So defensively, I think that makes him way, way better. Clearly, as I've said numerous times, I think Anthony Edwards has to be the guy on this team. And they're not going to be a great team until Anthony Edwards surpasses Towns as their best player, which, who knows, maybe that happens this year. But Anthony Edwards has a chance not only to be a great offensive player, but I think with his body and athleticism, he could also end up being a very good defensive player. And then whether you like D'Angelo Russell or you don't like D'Angelo Russell, the fact is that he's a talented guy and he did play better this year, although he didn't in the playoffs necessarily. But over the course of the regular season, I think he had a better year than what a lot of people thought or a lot of people wanted to give him credit for. So just in a vacuum, when you forget about what they gave up to the Jazz in order to get Gobert, I think he does fit what they're trying to do. Now, does he push them over the top and make them a championship contender, just like the DeJounte Murray trade? I don't think that Minnesota is now a title contender, but they're certainly better. And if you're Minnesota where you've been to the playoffs once in like 33 seasons, maybe just being better and competing for a top four seed in the Western Conference, maybe that's pretty good. Maybe that's enough. And maybe you're not as worried about, hey, can we win a title? However, you have to look at what they gave up. And to give up three unprotected number one picks and a top five protected pick and then all those players to get a guy who I think most people around the league would say, I'm not sure exactly what the value is of a top flight center unless you're talking about Jokic or Embiid. It seems like an awful lot to give up. So although I'd like to trade on the floor in a vacuum for Minnesota, I do think it makes them better in the short term. I don't like giving up all those number one picks and potentially being able to draft guys who could fit better next to Edwards and Towns moving forward. Gobert accelerates your timeline, but I think he accelerates you into a second round NBA playoff team, or maybe best case scenario, you get to a Western Conference Finals, but in no way, shape, or form do I think this team, as it's constituted right now, becomes an NBA championship team unless Anthony Edwards is ready to become a top five or top 10 player in the next year or two, which I'm not sure that's the case.
All right. Next few aren't really big ones. Garland signed his 5-year max rookie contract. We locked him in, Mike. Locked him in. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way Garland improved last year, that's a no-brainer for the Cavs in such a way that, one, I mean, he's going to continue to get better. He's 22 years old, 21 years old. I don't even know what he is, but a guy who's clearly has a tremendous amount of upside, got unbelievably better this year from where he was in his first 2 years. So you got to believe that he's going to continue to get better. And it makes complete sense. You're going to lock this guy up through his prime years. So
yep.
Kudos to the Cavs. Next question for them.
Really the last move that we have to talk about, Mike, because the rest are small ones. Your boy got his contract extension. He's the guy who I don't think is going to play 250 games.
You knew that was going to happen.
He said he wants to prove that he's a winner, Mike. Did you see that? I want to prove that I'm a winner. And I say, Tim, you've proven you're a winner at the buffet. You're a winner there, Zion. I want you to prove me wrong.
Man, you are down on the guy.
I'm down on him. What has he done? He was exciting when he's been on the floor,
he's been historically great.
Listen.
He's been historically great when he's on the floor.
Well, he's got to be great on the floor to get my.
You're right. I'm over all the talking.
He better show up day one training camp ready to play, like none of this nonsense.
You're right.
Because listen, I can guarantee you if we talk to Pelicans fans, like legitimate Pelicans fans, and I don't even know if there's that many of them. But legitimate Pelicans, based on the attendance of the Pelicans games. But you talk to legitimate Pelicans fans. I want to take a guess. What percentage of them
think that he's going to make a difference to them, like in the long term? Because I'm telling you right now, I don't buy it. I'm telling you, I'm keeping the under.
All right, let me ask you this. If he was on the Cavs and you had seen what you saw during the time when he played, and this guy's 21 years old, would you be like, hey, man, let's just let this guy go?
Well, I wouldn't.
Or would you want to sign him?
I wouldn't let him go, but I just, like, I know that this was a signing that had to be done. I get it, Mike. I totally get it. I'm just saying.
It's put up or shut up. I get it. I understand that. It makes complete sense. At a certain point, potential is no longer enough.
Listen, if you go back and you want, like, you lived it more than I did. I was like 12 at the time. But if you go back and you watch the Zdrunas in his first 3 years in the NBA, and then after all his ankle injuries, but he was still a really good player. He was still a huge player for the Cavs. Okay? But if you go back and you watch his rookie and his first two years, right, Mike? Before he got injured, like, he was a completely different player. Right?
Foot injuries are devastating. Well,
what does Zion have?
Right. And big, we're talking about not, I mean, usually we're talking about tall. Here we're talking about
wide.
Here we're talking about big in a different way. But that speaks to, at some point, Zion has to get in the best shape of his life. And he's always going to be a huge person.
Do you trust him to do it, though, Mike?
At this point, I don't think you can say that you do, right? I don't think I can say I trust him based on what we've seen to this point. But at some juncture in a guy's career.
Who weighs more right now? Zion or Charles Barkley?
Chuck weighs more, I think.
I think it's closer than you think.
It might well be. Look, what Zion can be and what he's been when he's healthy is just a completely unique player that there's nobody in the league that plays anything like the way this guy plays. And with the development of the Pelicans roster around him in terms of what they did last year and what they have in terms of draft equity from the Anthony Davis trade, this team's set up that if they play their cards right and he stays healthy, they've got a real chance to be a factor in the Western Conference this year and for many, many, many years to come. But at some point, Zion's got to take his conditioning seriously and he's got to stay healthy. And he controls, I guess, only one of those two things. Clearly, the one impacts the other. But when this guy's been on the floor, he's been historically great. And as you said, offering the extension, getting him to sign, there really was no other choice for New Orleans, and there really was no other choice for him. He wasn't going to sign that qualifying offer because of his injury history. So I think that it's hard to know what you read and what you hear. Obviously, during the season, there was all this rumblings that the Pelicans and Zion were on a different, you know, they weren't connected. And then as the season ended, Griff came out and said, no, we knew where he was all the time. We had this relationship, and Zion never really came out and personally expressed any unhappiness with the Pelicans organization. So you hope that they're on the same page, they're working to get him in the best shape of his life, that he's matured to the point where he understands how important that is, and that we get to see him on the floor, because he's such a unique talent. He's such a fun guy to watch because he plays the game in a way that's completely different from anybody. And I hope he gets to be out on the floor and showing everybody what he can do over the course of the season, because there's just nobody who plays the way he plays. And I hope he's healthy, and I can't wait to watch it if he is.
Yep. Okay. Mike, one more thing I want to add, was reported today, and because I just wanted to make sure that nothing had happened since we started recording. Beal has a no trade clause. Like a legitimate no trade clause in his contract.
Makes sense. I mean, I guess all that does is it dictates that he can tell you where he wants to go or not go.
Yep. So,
but which you can look at it from the Durant standpoint, and you can say, okay, Beal or Durant, they go and they demand they want to be traded. Durant's got 4 years left on his deal. Let's say Beal 2 years from now has 3 years left on his deal, and he says he wants to be traded. There's not any team that's going to trade for him or trade for Durant that isn't going to talk to these guys in advance and at least believe that the guy is going to want to be there. So it's not like, let's say that Sacramento has the best offer for Kevin Durant. If Durant doesn't want to go to Sacramento, Sacramento would be moronic to trade for him because the guy's going to go in there and he's going to be unhappy right from the very moment he sets foot in the door. And chances are he's just going to demand another trade from Sacramento, or he's going to report, or there's just like, so I think even though you have that no trade clause, I think the reality is that the where we are in the player empowerment era, that even if these guys, whatever, Durant has his list, you're just not going to trade. You're not going to trade a guy to somewhere that he doesn't want to go. Not because the team is, not because the current team that he's on is acquiescing to his demands. It's more just the fact of what team would trade for a guy that doesn't want to be there, especially a superstar. Now it's different if it's a lower tier guy, but for one of these top five, top 10 players, top 20 players in the league, are you really going to bring in a guy on a max contract who doesn't want to be there? That seems like not a good way to do business. Yep. So I don't think it really, it's not surprising that he has it, but I don't think it really matters, if that makes any sense.
I get it. All right, Mike, anything else NBA you want to talk?
Let's see.
Because our segment's back tonight to end.
I know it's back. And I don't think there's anything else. I think the only thing, the big thing, obviously the Durant piece is still hanging over it. And then the only other guy that's really out there from a national standpoint that matters is Ayton. And I think Ayton, you're just, if you're Phoenix, you're not going to do any, you're not going to do anything with Ayton until you figure out whether or not he's going to be a part of the Durant trade. And I think the same thing for people offering him an unrestricted free agency. I just don't know. There's a huge demand for centers, which makes it even more surprising when we talked about with Rudy Gobert that they were able to get so much for him. Cause I just don't know what the market is for centers. Any thoughts on Sexton? I guess that's the last thing.
I think he's going to take the qualifying offer and bet on himself at this point. I think that's the move for him to do it. Because I just don't think there's any money left out there for him. The money that he wants.
I wouldn't mind. Honestly, I wouldn't mind that from the Cavs' perspective. Kind of goes back to what we talked about when they made the LeVert trade, that you have Sexton on the qualifying offer. LeVert's got one more year left in his deal. He got both those guys on the team this year. You kind of see which guy fits better, which one plays and does well, fits in with their teammates. And then you decide, okay, what do we do from here? Now, I know that Sexton would be an unrestricted free agent. And if he plays really well, he's probably going to price himself out of the Cavs. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe that won't be the case. Maybe he'll look at it. Maybe he signs a 1-1 deal with the Cavs or at the end of this season. This summer. I don't know. I'd like to see him back and at least see what he looks like in a winning environment. Because I do think he's a guy that has talent and has some things that he could contribute and bring to the table that the Cavs need in terms of one-on-one scoring and just that kind of thing. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I'd like to see him be on this team this year to see what it looks like. And I don't know what the right number is. I don't know what the right number of years. I don't know if he just plays in the qualifying offer, but I would like to see Colin Sexton play on this Cavs team in a winning environment and see if they could figure out what a role for him would be.
Yep. Well, we'll have to see. I think he's going to take a qualifying offer because I don't think there's money out there for him, what he's wanting at least. So that's my position.
Yeah.
All right.
I see the Cavs offering either he's plays in the qualifying offer or they sign him to a shorter contract, maybe a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract with a player option. I could see that.
Yeah. All right, Mike, it's time. Bye bye, Baker.
We got a fifth round pick for him, man.
Listen,
I'm excited.
Well,
we might be able to get a backup.
We might be able to get a backup
safety for the number one overall pick in the draft.
My dad was furious. What a coup! My dad was furious that he's like, that's like the worst give back that you could get. I'm like, Dad, the Browns had no leverage. They knew he wasn't going to play here. Everyone across the league knew he wasn't going to play here. My dad was like, ooh. There's 18 million reasons for him to play here. I'm like, he wasn't going to play here, Dad. There was no way, there's zero chance he was going to play here.
He wasn't going to be a part of it. It wasn't going to happen. So they got a fifth
year. All you have to know is they got a, you got a fifth round draft pick for him, and you had to pay $10.5 million of his salary. That tells you everything you need to know.
I mean, that was the best offer. The best offer. And but
there's no demand for the guy because he's at best a mediocre.
You remember that when he's kicking our ass up and down the field week one. You remember that.
Maybe. but I think he's a mediocre quarterback at best.
Okay. I'm just saying, Mike, when we are starting Jacoby Brissett the first eight games of the season, and you
look, that's fine, but this is a long term. It's a long-term player, right?
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Mike, okay. We have a known quantity in Baker. He's a known quantity. We've got a guy who we don't even know if he's going to be able to play this year. And if he's going to be able to, I'll try to put this in a very politically correct way, he's going to be able to keep his head on straight and not do anything that's going to jeopardize the rest of his NFL career and time with the Browns, which, oh, by the way, we're guaranteeing money. Listen, Deshaun Watson is a great NFL player if he's able to play. We as a organization and as a Cleveland fandom are being put through the ringer right now because we don't even know. We're very likely going to be stuck with Brissett as our quarterback for half the season. And when I would have preferred we just stay the course with Baker. But, and this is coming from, this is after 4 months or whatever, however long we've known Deshaun's on our team. Although, obviously I'll be happy to be proven wrong, be happy about it, but at least we had a known quantity with Baker. We knew what we were going to get. He did so much for us as Browns, listen, Browns fans, and I understand that he was terrible last year. He was terrible. But he got us a flipping playoff victory. He led us to the playoffs. He pulled us out of the doldrums. And we are people, anyone that's, all these people, on there, it's pretty, I think it's pretty divided. I think it's 50-50, Mike. I really do. I think 50% of the fan base are happy to see him go. And 50% of the fan base are sad/, and I kind of fall in the middle because obviously, like, I am willing to say that he's probably never going to win a Super Bowl. However, he did so much for us as a quarterback. I mean, and yes, that even means playing injured when he probably shouldn't have been playing last year. But he wanted to win, and his competitive nature took over, and I truly appreciated that. And he got us a victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs. And if we can do that in the next 2 years, great. If we can get to the playoffs and win some games, great. If we can, but I don't know how I feel. I feel icky about it still, just primarily because of the whole Watson situation. And we don't need to really get into that, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it other than what I just said.
So here's how I look at it. If you stay the course with Baker, you're sentencing yourself to mediocre to, I guess maybe I could give slightly above average quarterback play, given the fact that he was injured last year. But what you're really looking at in that case is then you have to build a historically great team around him in order to be able to win. And I just don't know that that's going to happen. So that you're putting a lot of eggs in that basket of being able to say we're going to build the 85 Bears defense or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense when you have Trent Dilfer as your quarterback, or you're going to build a Ravens defense. That to me is really, really hard to do. And now with Watson, you have two possibilities, right? You have a possibility that he gets in even more trouble. You have the possibility that he's suspended for 8 games or he's suspended for the entire season, or that he does more dumb things and he never plays it down for the Cleveland Browns. Is that possible?
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely. It's possible. And yet at the same time, I think the ceiling, clearly, what Watson's done when he's been in the league and he's been on the field and playing is far superior to anything that Baker Mayfield has ever been able to put together for any extended amount of time. So as a result of that, I think it's a floor and ceiling question where, yeah, the basement could fall out of this thing and the Browns could be left holding the bag and look really, really stupid and sentence themselves to many, many years of terrible football, which we've already experienced. On the other hand, I think you're betting on the fact that this gets resolved. And even if he gets suspended for 8 games or 16 games, he doesn't sit out another year and then comes back and plays, that you still have a guy who's a superior player. Yeah, I don't think
that if he sits out the whole season, that's 2 straight seasons he hasn't played in the NFL.
I agree. Look, that's a huge, like, we can all say what we want, but if you don't do what you're being paid to do for 2 years, you got to be getting worse at it. I don't care how much you're working in training camp. I don't care how much you're working on your own. You're playing in an NFL game is just not the same. So yeah, that's not going to be a good thing if that's the direction that we end up going. But I do think that if you stayed with Baker, I think you were settling it for mediocrity. And the Browns took a big swing and it could end up biting them, but it could also end up working out really, really well. And I think that what they were able to get for Baker Mayfield, and I know the NFL trades don't work the way NBA trades work and the way baseball trades work. So when teams trade, you don't get these giant hauls of things and different stuff, but it tells you what the value of Baker Mayfield was around the league. So I don't think the Browns aren't getting rid of a guy that the rest of the league was clamoring to sign as soon as he became available. That's just not the case. He's viewed around the league as a very mediocre quarterback, and I think the return they got for him says that.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll revisit this in 10 weeks or 9.5 weeks.
It'll be here before we know it. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. I know we're a day late, but we are glad to be with you here.
An hour and 10 minutes, Mike. There you go.
We did. And so we will soon, I'm sure we'll be back on with news of what is happening with Durant and Sexton, and who knows what else will happen. Maybe Kyrie will get traded. So there'll always be more and lots of summer league.
And who knows, our NBA pods might have to take a hiatus for a few weeks. So we'll have to figure it out. Mike's going to be on the road, and then I'm going to be on the road, and then Mike's back on the road again. So
yeah, we might have to record our own 10-minute segments and piece them together. Who knows? We'll figure something out. But anyway, thanks for sticking with us. We really appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.